Nate, let me pay you a little compliment here. I think you have that rare drive time host gene where you can just talk, you know?
Hello and welcome to this late night edition of the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and the second and final presidential debate of the 2020 election has just wrapped up. It was a very different debate from the first one. There was much less interrupting. Part of that was mechanical. The mics were muted for the first 2 minutes of each candidate's responses. But part of that was also a choice by the president to interrupt less. That's not to say that it was a cordial debate. It wasn't. And there was a bit more of a focus on policy, and it was definitely more comprehensible than the first debate. So let's get into what exactly was discussed and what it all means. Here with me to do that, our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver. Hey, Nate.
We made it, everybody. We made it. Two general election debates, however many, 12 or 13 primary debates. I mean, not quite that many, like 10, 11. The VP debate, a canceled debate, the town halls that were, you know, wonderfully put on by our network, ABC News. We've made it. It's just that whole election thing we have to cover now. The actual election part.
Where's your beer, Nate?
I am drinking a beer.
Oh, good to see. Good. I was kidding.
Yeah. This is like the marathon runner who starts celebrating 10 yards before the finish line and then trips and is surpassed by five other runners. Nate, don't celebrate yet.
I'm celebrating the end of the debates. This is like...
One beer is okay.
No, this is usually...
We'll allow you one beer, Nate.
This is often like the end of like the substantive period of the campaign. People kind of forget like post-debate. I guess Comey letter was a big exception 4 years ago, right? Oftentimes the final...
Hey, we're still on the intros.
Okay. I just wanted to shake up the format a little bit, you know? Break the fourth wall.
Also here with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. Hey, Claire.
Hi.
And also with us is managing editor Micah Cohen. Hey, Micah.
Hi, everybody.
So actually, the first question I had kind of gets back to what you already dove right into, Nate, which is we're going to get into the nitty gritty of like what actually happened in this debate. But from the 30,000 foot up view, Biden is leading nationally by almost 10 points on average. In the likeliest tipping point states, he's leading between 6 and 7 points. Did anything happen tonight that is likely to change any of that?
I tend to think not. And keep in mind that we can definitely guess wrong, right? We haven't seen any polling or other data yet. But no, look, I think both candidates were better stylistically. I think Biden had higher moments and a few moments at the end where he's a little weaker, but his final response is very strong. On the substance, I mean, look, Trump was telling a lot of things that won't pass muster with fact checkers. Trump is taking out a lot of unpopular positions on Obamacare, whatnot, and the public doesn't trust Trump on a lot of the stuff. I think the Hunter Biden stuff will go over a lot of voters' heads. I don't really think Trump landed a lot of blows there. So we'll see. I mean, look, Biden is ahead in the horse race polls. So if you had to guess what will voters think, maybe they'll look a lot like the horse race polls. People say Biden won by 10 points the debate, which is kind of reflecting their initial preferences. Maybe I'll be wrong. I don't know. But like Trump needed, sorry, the cliche, a pretty big game changer tonight. And I don't really see how he would have gotten it.
Trademark John Heilman.
Trademark. Yeah, sorry. I mean, doubling down, game change. Yeah, I mean, look, Biden was pretty solid. Trump was more restrained on some stuff, but a lot of the stuff coming out of his mouth is, again, not going to be stuff that people necessarily believe. And Trump, I'm not sure he tied. Maybe he did, but he needs a lot better than a tie. He needs a win.
Claire, what did you make of tonight's debate and how it plays into this whole election that we've been covering for the past, I don't even know how long it's been anymore?
What I thought was a really interesting moment was when, I can't remember what section it was in, but Biden said, this guy's talking about, you know, my family, about Biden's family and like, you know, kind of alluding to sort of the stuff that Trump was kind of trying to intersperse, say, like it seemed like to throw Biden off, talking about Hunter Biden, talking about Joe Biden's brother's financial dealings, kind of like deep cut stuff. And Biden had this line where he was like, well, this isn't about my family. This is about your family. And he like looks to the camera and he's basically like, you know, I'm here to like return the middle, whatever his line was. And then Trump goes, listen to this guy. He's like, this is these politician lines. He's like acting like a normal politician. And it was this perfect moment because on some level, I knew exactly what Trump was saying. And you kind of feel as like a cynical political reporter of like, yeah, he is doing that. Biden. But like, that's Biden's entire campaign is to be normal or like, you know, a return to like, didn't you miss it when you could like fall asleep to NPR instead of like gripping your desk while listening to it? And I think that that was kind of the vibe of the debate. It was much more policy focused. I mean, things that stuck out to me were discussions of the ACA and I think towards the end, some interesting stuff about, you know, I think we're going to continue to see the Trump campaign glom on to some of these. Oh, well, when does Joe Biden want to transition totally out of oil? But there was a lot more kind of like substantive stuff, but it didn't particularly strike me that anything would change the state of the race. As Nate said at the top before I so rudely interrupted his wonderful monologue.
I did go
which
out,
I'm giving yeah. an opening for
okay.
here.
Okay.
It didn't, I don't think it changed much. Nate, talk to us about the silly season that starts now.
Okay, I'm going to come back in like 15 minutes, if that's okay, guys. And I'll
okay, all right, Nate, give it I'm to kidding. Us. What did you make of the debate? We want to hear from Micah. We'll go
no,
back.
No, 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 that wasn't let me talk. That wasn't a let me talk passive-aggressive move. That was a just jibe at Nate. Go ahead, Nate. I'm interested in this question.
No, the silly, because you do get like what you get in an election where it's not like a photo finish, right? Is you get constant kind of false alarms about the race tightening. I mean, maybe it will tighten. Our model actually thinks that like Trump's going to gain back a point before November for a third. And it thinks that these state polls are not quite as good for Biden as national polls. So it has Biden winning the popular vote by 8 points and not 10, right? So we actually do price in some tightening. But there's going to be a lot of false alarms, right? Look, if you had anything really good to use on your opponent, you would not use it at a time when, by the time you are listening to this in the morning, listeners, 50 million people will probably already have voted, right? It's like 48.7 million as I'm reciting this, right? So I'm sure it'll be 50 by the morning when we turn this around. Or turn around tonight, maybe it won't be. 49 million, right? It's a bit late in the day when only 5% of the electorate is undecided. A third of people have already voted, roughly, even assuming we're going to have very high turnout, which I think we will, right? And, you know, we've kind of seen the entire playbook from both campaigns now, right? I mean, Trump is trying with this Hunter Biden stuff. By the way, Trump had kind of hinted at this big Wall Street Journal exclusive story on Hunter Biden. It turned out to kind of get routed through the editorial page. The newsroom, if you're a normal person and don't understand like how these highbrow journalistic shops work, right? The newsroom and the editorial page are
Nate,
separate.
Are you drunk?
Our listeners don't know the difference. You, oh my God, offense. You are so freaking wrong. What you don't, what our listeners.
In fairness.
No, you are completely wrong.
I agree with Nate.
You're completely wrong. And in fact, I think it's, first of all, I would, if I ran one of these papers, I would not have.
I think our listeners know. I think our listeners know, but they can
but
tell us.
But they don't know that,
I think on average, Americans don't know
Galen,
and don't really care about the difference between the Galen, editorial board and
went,
the regular.
When I went to
can
work
I,
in your
can
Times.
Can I interrupt this first?
Where's the mute button?
Can I interrupt this? Nate, let me pay you a little compliment here. I think you have that rare drive time host gene where you can just talk, you know?
I know, we really were going through a bunch of different topics there. I kind of lost the thread.
And by the way, that's the Nate that, you know how Biden has, here's the deal. And tonight he had, come on, Nate says, by the way.
So
when I went to work for the New York Times, right, I did not know.
We're not going to come back to that Wall Street Journal op-ed, okay. But we are going to come back to the fact that, yes, Trump is talking about things that are not necessarily resonating with the American people right now, not really talking all that much about coronavirus, the economy, even the Supreme Court. But we haven't heard from Micah. And I would like to allow him to get in here and share some of his thoughts on the evening. So, Mike.
Actually, Galen, I think Claire was trying to get in there. Claire, Claire, what did you want to say?
I think this means that Nate and I are the attention whores. No, I was just going to say, do you guys want to know what the New York Times, a.k.a. the Pat Toomey of media, the sort of steady center, said in their headline about the debate? In a calmer debate, President Trump and Joe Biden laid out starkly different visions, clashing over the pandemic, immigration, race relations, and more. Thoughts? Or Micah talk.
Yeah, here's where I'll jump in. Number one, Trump benefits and benefited on Thursday night from incredibly lowered expectations. I mean, he himself set expectations there with the first debate, so maybe it was some 13-dimensional chess move. But in this supposedly calmer, more normal debate, the president still like lied in every other sentence. He was muted for a good chunk of the time. So let's not go too crazy in ascribing some newfound restraint to President Trump. Like, he was muted. He didn't really have any other choice.
He wasn't muted. I mean, he wasn't interrupting that much, though.
Yeah, even when he wasn't muted, he wasn't really interrupting.
My deterrent. Point is just like...
It's a deterrent,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, right. He couldn't have interrupted. So what is right? So if like you don't have the ability to interrupt and then you choose not to interrupt, that to me is not some amazing display of restraint.
Just to be clear about exactly what happened, the way that it was structured was the first 2 minutes of each candidate's response, the other person was automatically muted. But after those 2 minutes are over, you can interrupt as much as you want and no one mutes you.
Yes. But let me I thought the way Nate framed it up top is the right way to look at this, at least in terms of the horse race, in the sense that Biden is up by a lot, according to the polls, and therefore Trump needs a lot to change. I did think his performance tonight was enough maybe to like get some wavering Republican-leaning voters, conservative voters, to come home. You know, that maybe that's more a reflection of just like Biden is up by so much. Like part of me looks at his lead nationally, which is at like 10 percentage points, and just thinks that's like a ton of that's a huge lead. So maybe I do expect it to tighten a little bit. And who knows, you know, if we see tightening over the next several days, can Trump build upon that in some way to get back within striking distance so that his advantage in the Electoral College kicks in and the race does come down to a photo finish. I would be surprised by that, but I guess what I would say is, yes, Trump needed a knockout blow or a game changer of sorts. He didn't get that. He didn't get the opposite either. It wasn't a disastrous performance for him, at least judged against the like incredibly lowered expectations the media has for him. And the media will play a huge role in determining what kind of polling movement we see coming out of this, right?
All right, we're going to dig deeper into this in a second, but first...
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Nate was saying earlier on that essentially if you have some kind of October surprise or if you have dirt on your opponent or some big closing argument that you use it kind of in the run up to the final debate. Do we think that, you know, the week and a half that remains in this campaign is therefore just kind of stagnant? Like, do we think that there's a chance that major stories have yet to come out? I mean, what happens now between, I guess, Friday when people are likely listening to this and November 3rd?
Halloween?
The World Series?
My birthday?
Polls. Lots of polls.
No, I don't... What are we talking about here?
The leaves
we
turn
just
colors?
Had an election, we just had an election 4 years ago in which late movement essentially decided the election. Yes, this election is very different. There are very few undecided voters. A lot of people have already voted. But like, okay, one, even if you think the presidential race is done, and I don't think anybody should think that, but even if you do, whether Biden wins by 10 points or 5 points will make a huge difference in Senate races and House races. The idea that like the remaining days of the campaign will, not that necessarily they will feature movement, but that they can't feature movement, I don't think that's right.
No. Okay, so two things. First of all, what you generally won't see is a campaign holding ammo this late, right? So there can, of course, be news. If there's a Martian landing tomorrow, that could shake up the polls, right? But you wouldn't see like a...
How would that affect the polls, Nate, a Martian landing?
Maybe be good for Trump.
It would be good for Trump, I think.
It'd be good for Trump. You'd try to make a deal with them or something, right?
That's a great game show. Just think of crazy October surprises.
Who would it benefit? Oh, we got to do that.
Benefit.
We have to do that. That's a great idea.
We'll make it a video. Tony, let's work on that.
By the way, one thing that is happening is COVID. And in fact, there has been a pretty serious third peak in COVID cases in the U.S. I think we had over 70,000 cases diagnosed yesterday. We're going to have, I would think, looking at those numbers and looking at how bad things are in Europe, I would think we're going to have some record-breaking individual days of COVID. I would caution that we are doing a little bit more testing now than we had before. But even so, if you're having days with 80,000 or 90,000 or 100,000 new cases, and it's the highest figures on record, that's not a great way for President Trump to close, right? You know, this Hunter Biden story. I mean, so the Wall Street Journal news page did publish a story where the headline is, Hunter Biden's ex-business partner alleges father knew about venture. So it's not actually revealing very much reporting. It's just kind of saying that, like, this is an accusation made, right? And this is supposed to be a big game changer, the Trump people thought. You know, I mean, yeah, there can be news. Amy Coney Barrett will be confirmed to the Supreme Court in all likelihood, right? There's still news. There's an above average amount of news. But there aren't that many undecided voters. And this was like kind of the last real set piece of the campaign.
I think there's an October surprise yet to come. I don't have anything else to like back that up.
Well, but, the one thing I will say is if we're talking about things that could happen, you know, the idea that foreign influence campaigns could themselves be very serious and U.S. officials could, you know, bring them to light for voters, or the Trump administration could use maybe, I don't know how to put this, milder or, you know, less inflammatory foreign influence campaigns and use it to try to say, you know, this is benefiting Joe Biden. Like that stuff feels like 2020 last 10 days of the election kind of stuff to me.
Yeah, I guess the thing I'm trying to keep in mind through all this is that President Trump doesn't need to make up the entire 10 points he's behind, right? He's really only behind by, what is it, Nate? It's like six or 7 points.
Six. Pennsylvania, 6.1 or something.
So he's behind by 6 points in Pennsylvania. That's like a meaningful deficit, but it's not a blowout. And so if a few things go the president's way, then I think we're talking about a really different race. And I think we saw in 2016 that you can see a lot of movement over a short period of time. I do think things are different this year, at least in terms of the other undecided vote. The other thing I would just echo what Nate said, which is, in many ways, the like October unsurprise is COVID. Well, I was thinking back earlier today to, do you guys remember we used to have like all those discussions about Trump's approval rating and sort of like how much of a floor it had and how much of a ceiling it had? And we used to say like, well, what if something crazy happened and how low it could go, right? And I think what we found is his approval rating sort of at least does seem to have somewhat of a floor, right? There's been a horrible pandemic that he's, by most measures, mismanaged. There's been a huge resulting economic downturn. And his approval rating really hasn't dropped out of the low 40s, right? But he's losing to Joe Biden by a huge amount. And so I think that does show that despite the relative paucity of swing voters in the country these days and how that number has declined, you know, there are still enough where when you get truly, truly extraordinary circumstances like we're in now, you know, you can still get a blowout by at least modern standards, right?
Yeah. So I'm noticing here that we're not talking all that much about what happened in the actual debate, more the dynamics of the race between now and Election Day. And I'm glad we're having that conversation. I think voters are curious coming out of this debate. That's probably the biggest question. But of all of the things that Biden and Trump talked about tonight, you know, they talked about COVID, of course. They talked about, they accused each other of corruption. They talked about China, foreign policy, the minimum wage, family separation, institutional racism, climate change, oil, as you mentioned, Claire. Was there anything that stuck out to you as meaningful for the country? What kind of president Trump would be in his second term or Biden would be in his first? You know, I guess I gotta ask some policy debate-based questions before we wrap up here.
I think we should just mention, if nothing else, the conversation about race that came up, where Trump said completely non-credibly that he had done more for Black, more than any president since Abraham Lincoln for Black people. You know, that kind of, even it's like joking hyperbole is like not great. And particularly coming from Trump, who's obviously had, basically the past 5 years of American life, we've seen a lot of, you know, racist statements come out of Trump's mouth or dog whistles. The latest of which is this, this ploy to win suburban housewives by kind of dog whistling about letting in Section 8 housing to the suburbs. Anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting to see. Kristen Welker, the moderator, is a Black woman, and I believe only the second Black woman to be a presidential debate moderator. The first one came 30 years ago. So I thought it was notable that she devoted a good amount of time to that. Biden was asked about his 94 crime bill record and basically said it was wrong, you know. So that was interesting. So I think that's one thing. I can, you know, other people might have thoughts on policy stuff, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up that section of the debate.
Yeah, Trump also said he was the least racist person in the room, in addition to what he said about policy, comparing himself to Abraham Lincoln. I mean, one thing that people latched onto a bit in our live blog was Biden saying that he was planning on transitioning the country off of oil and gas, which seemed to be a blunter or more forceful kind of statement on that kind of climate policy than he's made in the past.
See, this is a silly season stuff, right? Transitioning away from oil and gas is a very conventional thing to say, right? Maybe if, you know, you had a GOP comm shop that was really trying to focus on that, they could turn into something. But like, I think it's probably even like a poll tested line potentially on Biden's behalf. Look, on the substance, certain things that will stand out. I mean, inherently Trump has a tough task talking about COVID because the situation's very bad, right? I think Joe Biden's opening lines on COVID were pretty good and well delivered. I think the immigration segment where Trump kind of implied that certain immigrants have low IQs, didn't imply, he said it, when he seemed pretty unempathetic at these children who are separated from their families, and Biden was pretty forceful on that point. I think Trump, again, saying that he would want to terminate Obamacare is something that I'm sure Biden will cut into ads. I think at the end, where Trump was asked, and both candidates were asked, what would you tell people who didn't vote for you? And Trump kind of, like, literally kind of wasn't even able to, like, conceive of that question, right? And then Biden gave kind of the standard fluff, but effective fluff, right, about, like, I'm an American president, right, and look directly to camera. I mean, those are the things I thought substantively kind of stood out, those three or four things.
Yeah, I would also go back to the segment Claire highlighted earlier on when Trump was sort of took a step back and was like, check out this politician over here. Because that kind of moment was really effective for him in 2016, I think, right? The kind of anti-politician, anti-establishment, populist line really worked for him in 2016. If you looked at polls that year, you know, there was some a lot of people view Trump as like a moderate, right? And certainly as an outsider. I just think that after 4 years in the White House, it's hard to pull that off again. But at least like in the moment, I mean, this is why I sort of hate analyzing the policy of these debates, because it just requires a level of credulity that I don't think is deserved. But anyway, even if to take like one level removed from that and just go to the level of like, you know, presence and what kind of feelings are the candidates trying to evoke, I think Trump certainly was trying a better playbook than he did in the first debate. I just don't know if it's a playbook that will work again.
As we wrap up the evening,
we're just getting started
on the East Coast. We're just getting started now. What are you all going to be doing over the next, now when people listen to this, it'll be 11 days to prepare for November 3rd. Now that we have the big set pieces behind us.
Yoga?
Look, I am going to pay a I'm going to pay a compliment to people on our staff. We are, as a site, better organized than we ever have been, right? We've gotten a lot of our work done ahead of time. We have lots of things we're very excited about for election night, right? I don't know. I mean, I think, like, it's important. Look, I'm on a level with people, right? The end of the election is stressful for reporters and for journalists, just like it is for voters. It may be a little bit more stressful if you have a forecast and you have opinions about how people might perceive different outcomes relative to that forecast. But I think it's important, like, not to work 24/7. You know what I mean?
If any 538 staff are listening, please, please disregard that last statement. We really need you to work 24/7. No.
23/6. No, but like, it's stressful to cover this stuff. I think it's like literally important to like have some ability to like look after yourself and sleep and exercise and have some nights and some weekends when you're not purely focused on the campaign. I've kind of learned that the hard way. I think it's important to pace yourself, right? It's different from an election where we know who wins on November 3rd and November 4th, you leave it all in the field and you go sleep for a week. This is very different. And so, you know, it's a marathon that you might have a 5K at the end afterward, you know?
I love this wellness conversation we're having. This is like Goop meets 538.
I was going to say, maybe when...
No, but it's actually... But I kind of mean it earnestly. I think this is like actually a good message that people should listen to from Nate. Because like it's a very American thing to like go whole hog and be like too into it and think it's like the be-all, end-all. And also, if I may say something, I feel like after 2016, people kind of like... let them, particularly if you had been a Clinton supporter. You know, I live in New York City. There was like, it was kind of this typical thing for people to be like, I just kind of like went crazy and like the world is ending. And it's like, you gotta like, don't give yourself the permission structure to just completely fall apart, you know? Keep calm and carry on.
I think when some of our campaign coverage winds down a little bit, we're gonna start a self-care podcast here at 538 and talk to people about how to improve their lives.
Nate, let's go on a run together, Nate.
I will anytime, yeah.
Let me just say, and it's hard to listen to this when I'm like trying to arrange a wedding on the side.
Congrats, by the way.
That's
Michael.
Hard to listen to too. No, thank you. I mean, it's a good thing, but.
Mazel.
I don't know. I'm a little uncomfortable with this tone we're taking of this campaign is over. Can we just at least take that tone with like,
we're not saying whoa. That we're having a wellness whoa. Check
campaign not over, but still embrace self-care.
Okay, I'm all for self-care, whether that be, you know, yoga, you know, a little pharmaceutical help. I'm all for that.
And that's the point at which the podcast went.
But what are we trying to say though? We're trying to say that I don't mean to straw man any of you. What are we trying? We're trying to say that the chances of a major change in the last few days of this campaign are small, but that Trump still has a meaningful chance of an upset, even if it's a long shot, question mark?
Yeah, look, it's tough to know how to calibrate the message, right? And one thing we'll say is, like, the model is the model, but you can, you know, if it's 70-30, or in this case 85-15, or whatever, it's 88-12, you can spend a lot of time talking about how the 12 could happen, or a lot of time talking about how the 88 could happen, right? And you wonder if the incentives in the marketplace are to spend all the time on the 12, even though it's not necessarily clear that, like, journalistically that's better. I don't know, right? I mean, I feel weird about selection in part because, you know, Trump is trying to delegitimize both the polling and the results themselves, right? And polling does provide a check, a measure of public opinion, independent from the vote count. So if there is a state where a bunch of mail ballots somehow don't get counted, then the polling can testify to what they might have said, highly imperfectly, but they do, you know, provide some news of that. And, you know, if Trump loses and alleges irregularities, if the loss matches the polls, that's one less reason to think that there had been irregularities. It's trying to delegitimize the polls, right? So it's a careful tightrope to walk. I mean, Trump does have a shot. I think, Micah, you made the very important point earlier that a narrow Biden win with 50 Democratic senators is very different than Biden winning Texas with 55 Democratic senators. I mean, it's almost like probably not as important as who wins, but it's like almost as important, I think, right? In terms of just, you know, if he gets 50 or maybe 49, right? Doesn't even get to 50, right? Then you're just kind of preventing Trump from doing stuff if you're Democrats, right? You get kind of a half presidency. If Biden is 55 senators in a big landslide, then he has his own presidency, right? So it's a pretty substantive difference, I would say.
I think that's right. But I also think this, the way Nate put it, just journalistically, of like whether we should focus on the 88% or the 12%, I do think is an interesting question. Like in 2016, it was really easy because Trump was at about 1 in 3 then, and the rest of the media was exclusively almost focused on the 70%, right? This year, it's much harder because, one, Trump is at 12%. And I don't know I'm interested how you guys would describe the rest of the media. I think it's, for most of the campaign, everybody has been super, super gun-shy about saying Biden is ahead and have basically been like, well, anybody could win. But recently, I've seen like a little bit of the like, this race is over creep in more. So I don't know. I still think like it's valuable to focus on how that 12% could happen.
Yeah, I think that assessment is about right, Micah. And of course, we'll continue talking about this in the coming days, but let's leave things there for now. It's getting late. So thank you, Nate. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Micah.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Galen. The consummate professional.
I'm honored. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the virtual control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Also, remember to subscribe on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.